of the chairperson, Honorable Sandy Tobias. I must officiate to the meeting and she also sends her apologies because she's still in bed. From my side, I hope that we can have a fruitful and constructive meeting to further the business of Parliament and the government. So let's start by introducing the different delegations. I'll start with the members of Parliament first, and I think they can introduce themselves. My name is John Skippers. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee and of Defense. Yes, Julie?
Benjamin Julie, member of Committee of Defense.
Thank you. Then we have the different leaders of the delegations. We have the Mr. Stormy, the leader of the GOD delegation. Can you announce your introduce your member, please?
Thank you, Honorable. Okay, as already introduced, Captain Stormy, GOD Defense Policy and Planning Deputy Director Agenda. Our delegation will introduce themselves.
I'm Lieutenant General Tishima Sanzuma, Chief of HR.
I am Major General Sindane, Chief Director of Strategy.
Are you from
the leader of the delegation of Armed Forces, Mr. Chumo, and ask him to introduce his delegation. Oh, other members of... Sorry.
Good morning, members. I'm General Fakir, Brigadier General Fakir, from the Strategy and Planning Office.
I'm Akuri Pata, Chief Director, Strategic Management.
Bonnie Ubrak, Director, Budgeting, Spring.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Chumo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Sipo Tomo. I'm the CEO of Armstrong, and I've taken the cue from Ms. Mitumi. I will also ask my members to introduce themselves. I'll start on my right.
I'm Solan Makos. I'm the GS of Armstrong. I'm Mike Matsibe. I'm the ex-GM Quality and IT.
My name is Pierre Hoffman. I'm the CFO of Armstrong.
I'm Darby Crystal, I'm Assistant General Manager Acquisition with Armstrong.
So then we have also two people from Jamel. Can you then introduce themselves?
My name is Stefan Berger, I'm the General Manager of Jamel Land Systems.
Good morning, my name is Joel Moore, I'm the Executive Manager of Jamel IT.
Thank you. And we have the media here, and welcome to them also, and the people from the PMG, Parliamentary Monitoring Group. So, let's carry on with the meeting. We will have the presentation of Arms Corps first, and then we're going to indulge in the discussion of the document. Then after that, we'll come to the GOD. Chair Tumo?
Thank you. Honorable Chair, the presentation that we are going to give the committee today relates to Armed Forces annual report, which was presented to the committee last year. Subsequently, the committee had a meeting on the 12th of September last year to deliberate on the annual report that we have presented to the committee. And on Tuesday the 24th, the committee came up with a report And in that report, there were issues that the committee wanted AMSCO to answer. And the reason we are here today is to specifically answer those issues. The presentation will address the issues. The issues, we've got a list of issues, and what we have tried to do is that these issues were sent to AMSCO in the form of a letter, and we have tried to keep the same numbering in our presentation as the numbering in the letter. And then these issues came from the following areas that we that I've shown there. With relation to the AMSCO operational budget, the performance of AMSCO against its acquisition goals, its SANDF operational support, the management of the DOD strategic facility, the transformation challenges of AMSCO, the risk due to insufficient funding of AMSCO, and the Auditor General report, and lastly, conclusions and recommendations which were made on those points. Now, the presentation will go in this way, in that I will generally lead the presentation, but because the questions are varied and they are in different areas, what I will do is I will ask members of my team from time to time to give the details on the specific question that will be answered. I will start now by let me start by addressing the first two questions. And the first question was that there is a need for AMSCO to build its field base. Therefore, the committee wanted a briefing on the reskilling needs to be available in 6 months. Oh, okay. And then from there, I will go to the next question, which relates to the committee needing a report with regard to the replacement of the mainframe and the technology renewal, that is our IT. And there was also a query on the need to clarify on why AMSCO spent 72% of its budget only on salary. Now, I will start with the first question. And then I will ask Mr. Mogodi to try and answer the question of AMSCO on how AMSCO is building a skills base. Mr. Mogodi.
Thank you, Mr. Song. Jamie, could you please go to the figure slide? Yeah. That's the breakdown of my presentation. Those are the issues that I'm going to deal with. Then, if you move to the next slide, I'll just explain the, to give a bit of background,
do you all have this particular document that we talked to now? All the members of parliament?
No.
Can you just dish out some documents, some of those documents to the honourable members, please?
When we were in Stellenbosch, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, the committee asked that we should send the document a week in advance by email. And the committee administration will then take the document and distribute it. And we have done that about a week ago.
Yeah.
Just
hang on. Some of the members need some of the documents. How many? Just put up your hands, please. Those who need the documents. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
I think, Mr. Mugosha, you can continue because the documents will be served to the members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've indicated that that's the breakdown of the presentation. And then, to just explain a power of background, we've got three broad categories of staff in AMCO. For support staff, then the general support staff, such as HR, corporate affairs, and finance, among others. And then we've got non-technical support to the core functions. That would be the registry management, legal functions, financial, and others. And then we've got technical personnel. Those would be engineers and scientists, among others. Now, the first two categories are generally easily available on the market, and when we appoint the people, we really just need to orientate them on AMCO processes. The third category of technical personnel consists of people with technical qualifications in the technical discipline, and they are generally extremely difficult to find. The scarcity is exacerbated by the fact that other organizations need the same type of skills as well. So we are competing with a lot of other organizations. And then the critical enabling competencies in our working environment, the three broad areas are project management, technology management, and engineering management, with subcategories as indicated on the slide. These competencies are applied in a broad range of areas, as indicated there. The domains are broad military, and then the vehicles, different types of military vehicles, aircraft, vessels, electronics, weapons, for example, guided missiles, torpedoes, rockets, and bombs, etc. And then general support. Now, the concerns in regards to skills now, particularly in the core function of AMCO, is that people with the right qualifications are not really available in the market. And when they are available, we find that they don't have the military-specific domain knowledge. And this type of knowledge needs to be gained through on-the-job experience and training. And then on top of that, we've got transformation challenges. People from these are, among others, the fact that people from designated groups are even more in short supply, and the market pays a premium for them, and they tend to be more mobile. And with regard to the issue of the market, you know, you are competing with the private sector companies like Anglo, etc., which can afford in the future for deep pockets. And then the more experienced employees who we can look up to fulfill the role of being coaches and mentors in the development of other people from the actual execution core. And now as a result of the fact that they are also already loaded with work, then it makes it difficult for them to become available to be coaches. So that's a challenge we need to manage all the time. And then also we have an aging workforce. The average age of AMCO people is 45. And then as you know, time goes, then they get closer and closer to retirement. But it must be pointed out that the average age of people employed from 2000 is 34. So we are trying to address them. And then, obviously, there's an ongoing competition in the market for the small pool of competence. So to try and mitigate the effects of this challenge, we have implemented and we continue to do so a number of measures. And these include you know, the measures we take with them, and that as much as we can afford and as much as the department can give us, we try to address the issue today. We've over the years implemented a number of measures to actually try and improve the earnings position of employees in AMCO, to the best of our ability. And then we invest in veterans and trainee programs. And I must mention here that because one of the issues that has been raised that the extent of our investment is far from what we would like to do. We are really constrained by primarily resources, which is that. And then we put an emphasis, so this is a developing and an unfolding area within our organization, the issue of coaching. There's a challenge in that I've indicated in the previous slide that the people that have to, the people with experience are already loaded. And these are the people we look up to fulfill the coaching role. And then because of that, they may, in some instances, tend to be reluctant to fulfill this role. And we try to give them some recognition for fulfilling the coaching role. And then we invest in succession planning. That is, we look at creating a pool of people who are suitably qualified through on-the-job training. We don't do succession planning in the sense that of saying when one individual moves on, then there's another one that's going to move. But we create a pool, then people can compete if possible. And then we've got a scheme to support people financially who want to further their studies. And then we profile on an ongoing basis the staff profile, looking at pending retirement, termination trends, the workloading, and trying to make sure that the organization will have people to carry it into the future. And then we are investing in developing specific leadership to address particular problems that face our organization. And we have also invested in an electronic learning infrastructure to enable employees to learn on their own with less support than they would otherwise require. And then I indicated earlier on that we invest in bursaries and training programs. I did mention that we would like to invest more than the extent which we are investing, but we are constrained by resources, but we are always struggling to get more support in this respect. And then we send people on training courses as well. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Now we'll go to the next report. And then this relates to the replacement of the mainframe and the technology renewal of Africa. And Mr. Matibe will talk us through that report.
Thank you, sir. The project to transform the application system of Africa was started in April 2005. I can tell you migrating the applications that are running on the mainframe to a client-server environment. The main objective was for technology renewal as well as reducing the cost of running the IT system. The main issue in terms of the mainframe system is that it's very expensive to maintain and run that system. In addition to that, the systems were developed more than 20 years ago. So they are using COBOL, and they are using the IDMS database management system. So those technologies are already outdated. So it is difficult then to continue going forward with those systems. The other challenge is the shrinking defense budget, which has an implication in terms of the funds that are available for us to do the IT function. There is also a problem in terms of our human resource system. Because we are using a cyborg system, and the company that is supporting that system notified us that come April this year, they will no longer be supporting that system going forward.
So we have systems that are there, and but the support won't be there. So it's a huge risk that that we're facing. Those are not the only problems that we have. We also have what we call system need applications. Applications that were developed a long time ago that we need to migrate as well. Okay, the progress to date, we have done a user requirement certification and we completed that in October last year. We took the output of that user requirement project, okay, and built an RFI and sent the RFI to the industry for us to assess the cost implications. When we got the return back from the industry, they quoted between 45 and 213 million, okay, for the replacement, okay, of those systems. Now, looking at the reasons why we were not able to complete the project, when we looked at the approach that was followed in that project, we felt that it was not holistic. Therefore, when we went to the management board and requested approval, okay, to lay the project, the mainframe migration project, and focus on an enterprise architecture, okay, so that we have a blueprint for all the application systems of AMCO. The other issue is the fact that some of the systems, okay, were not included in that project. So there were few systems that these systems, the application systems, that were outside the scope of the project. So we wanted a more holistic approach. We also wanted to go back to the management board as well as the board of directors, okay, for them to vote the fund, okay, for us to be able to execute the project. Right now we're estimating the cost of running the project at about 60 million. So then we might set the responses from the industry said between 45 and 250 million. So we came up with that bit of 60 million. We think that one would be more realistic. Okay, if we design a system for about 60 million. In terms of the project going forward, we have changed the date. Now we're saying we envisage that the project will be completed between 2009 and 2012. Depending on the availability of funds. So that was the mainstream migration project. Now I'm going to go to the capital renewal, because there was an issue, okay, I mean capital renewal as well. The reason we have to budget for capital renewal is that if you are running an IT system, you need to refresh the technology on a regular basis. So if you are looking at laptop PCs, pocket PCs and things like that, every 3 years you need to replace the equipment. If you are having printer, you have to replace them every 5 years. Okay, if you are using server, you have to replace the model every 3 years. Networking equipment every 5 years, and cable infrastructure needs to be refreshed over a period of 7 years. Okay. What is the real problem? The main issue is that the budget that IT is receiving from the corporation is never enough, okay, to be able to address all the requirements. The shrinking defense budget, as we have mentioned, and the total cost of ownership of the infrastructure that is already there. You know, if you put a computer system, you have to budget for maintenance, you have to budget for support, you have to budget for renewal of the infrastructure. So, and you have to budget for the software that is going to run those systems. So those will be escalating on an annual basis. So your budget then must try and keep up, okay, with those escalations. So we have reached a situation now where we are paying most of the funds that we are getting towards maintenance and support of those application systems. Okay, the objective then of the capital renewal strategy is to provide for renewal of IT equipment over every 3 to 5 years to plan properly the purchase of that IT infrastructure so as to minimize disruptions in the business. and to even spread, okay, the money, okay, so that you don't have the usual peak in terms of your expenditure. How has the situation improved up to date? With our enterprise architecture project, we were able, okay, to see, okay, the big picture, okay, where we are, what we are doing, the areas where we can optimize. So that's what we're doing right now. To look at all those areas to say we can save costs if we do this, if we do that, if we do that. Okay, we have also come up with guidelines. Okay, so that the manager, when they give IT equipment to their employees or the user, okay, they must have a way of allocating those computers instead of allocating them willingly. Okay, we are currently running a big project to consolidate all the servers at head office. There are about 88 servers that we have at the head office. So we wanted to consolidate all of them, because if we do that, then we'll be able to save on the license cost, we'll be able to save on the maintenance cost, and we'll be able to save on the support cost. Because most of these companies are charging per server. So every time you put a server in the infrastructure, then they want their maintenance, they want their support, they want their licenses. What still needs to be done? We are going to finish the server consolidation project at the end of this month. We are also going to deploy thin client devices, okay, rather than deploying PCs, okay, to the staff. Those people who are desk-bound, okay, who do not need DVDs, okay, CD-ROMs and things like that, we are going to give them thin client devices, which are half the price of a PC, okay, which also use the software that is on the server, rather than the software that is on the PC itself. So by doing that, we'll be able to reduce the cost of running IT. We are also initiating a printer consolidation project, okay, so that people, okay, or employees of AMSCO will be able to share printers instead of each and every individual having a PC on the desk. We are busy with the replacement of computers and notebooks. That is an annual affair. Okay, in the budget that we get every year, we need to make sure that there is enough funding for us to be able to replace the PCs and the notebooks that are at the end of life. We are also busy with the replacement of some components of the network that have also been there at the end of life.
Thank you, Chair. If we may proceed, now we are going to try and address the last question from the three that I spoke about earlier, and this relates to why is AMSCO spending 72% of the budget on salaries. Mr. Mangojo is also going to give us another presentation on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Tomo.
As you can see, AMSCO needs 400, at the bottom there, where it says total. AMSCO needs 400, last financial year, AMSCO needed 473.2 million rand to run the organization. And of that 472 million rand, 72%, or 339.7 million, went into the salaries of people, of personnel. And then we spent 14.5 million traveling. As you know, we are running the strategic defense packages, and we are sourcing or acquiring equipment from overseas in Europe. And our people need to undertake trips occasionally to go to Europe as part of the management of those projects. And also, we spend 41.5 million on computers, as Mr. Matibe has finished telling you where we spend the money. And then we spend 21.8 on contractor services, and then services to the municipality, water and light, 10.2 million. other operational costs, that is minor small things like stationary and other things, suspending 7.1 and depreciation 18.4 million. Now, we are going to try and tell you why specifically most of the money goes to people.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. As indicated there, the AMSCO is a service organization, and the bulk of our investment in terms of operational requirements is in the skills of people. As indicated there, unlike in a manufacturing organization, which I've used as an example, a manufacturing organization will have to invest in raw materials, machines, warehousing, and so on. And the investment in people would be but a small percentage of the total investment. And so that is one of the reasons, you know, the cost of personnel is so high. And furthermore, we operate in a technical complex environment, which requires high-level skills, and these skills are technical skills, and these typically, you know, it's a functional group which tend to require people to be paid highly, and that's related also to the market, in that these are areas where people are scarce, and then you have to pay them high salaries. And because of the nature of our work, we have a specific staff profile. But before I get to that, I just listed here our occupational level. And just so that you can understand the context that of our job grading system, it's listed on the left, and then the generic definitions of what the job levels are indicated on the right. You will see that our staff profile looks like this, and if you look particularly on the right, you look at the totals, you can see that at the very bottom end, we've got only 82 people, and as you go higher, we've got 207. The number increases up to when you get to the senior management level and the top management level. And this is very different from a typical organization, which is a triangle, which with a few people at the top and the number of people increasing as you get to the bottom of the organization. You can see in the our organization is more a diamond shape. And as a result, and bearing in mind that the people in the high earning functional group, that then contributes to the high the payroll cost of the organization.
Chairperson, now that concludes the three questions that I spoke about. We will now go to the next set of questions. And these questions relate to issues of the strategic defense strategy. And the first question that the committee wanted to ask you, or ask us to respond to, related to the fact that the committee, when it discussed the annual report, said that they wish to congratulate AMSCO for the deliverance of the four corvettes to the South African Navy. Although the submarine program was completed, the committee needed clarity on the issues of the 3 month delay. We're going to speak to that. And then also, the next issue relates to only 7 of the 12 light utility helicopters were delivered due to technical problems. The committee needed a report on what are the technical problems that occurred and have these been corrected, and that the budget for the Airbus has been overspent due to the complete plan not being reflected in the budget. What caused this to happen, and also for the additional funds applied by the DoD were not reflected in the baseline that the committee requested. And finally, we also answer the question relating to relating to a report on the delay due to the affordability program of the new generation light infantry vehicles, and whether and what has been done. and whether the project has been completed or not, and also clarity with regard to the 41-man index position of the country that is in the system, which has been done by Guinea. So in addressing all these three issues, I would I'll ask Mr. Kirchhoff to take us through the details.
From the members of the committee, thank you very much. The submarine program is actually one of the programs part of the ACP that has been running very well. We did experience a 3-month delay in the total program schedule. One must bear in mind that this program is a program that has been running over a period of 8 years, commencing during the year 2000. Although the Type 209 submarine is a submarine that the German Submarine Consortium has built before, this one is ever unique in many ways due to the fact that there are many South African subsystems in this submarine which had to be qualified. The 3-month delay primarily can be attributed to the fact that the manufacturer totally underestimated the extent of tests that were going to be required during the harbor acceptance trial and subsequent sea acceptance trial. Very few technical problems occurred during these trials. It was merely a question of the extent of tests that needed to be done to fully qualify all the South African subsystems in the complete program. The program is now going very well. The delay is being caught up, and as you know, the second submarine is being christened tomorrow, as a matter of fact, in Germany. With regards to the light activity helicopter, which we are acquiring from Abisko Westland in Italy, this program has been delayed by a considerable period of time initially due to the problems relating to the integration of locally manufactured subsystems into this helicopter. The delay reported in our annual report, where we planned for the previous financial year to deliver 12 helicopters and where only 9 was delivered, was primarily due to the requirements relating to certification of the helicopters. These helicopters had to be certified by the Civil Aviation Authority, had to receive civil certification, as well as certification by the Military Readiness Board and the Air Force. All the documentation needed to be produced by both of these organizations in order to satisfy them that the helicopters meet all the requirements for certification. This took a lot longer than what expected or initially planned. We could not proceed with the manufacture and acceptance of subsequent helicopters after the first 7 due to this time before certification was completed. So the certification requirements just had a concatenating effect on all subsequent deliveries. We are catching up at the moment. To date, 16 out of the total 30 helicopters have been delivered to South African Air Force. We're planning an additional 9 in the coming financial year and then a further 5 in the 2009 year, which will complete the full 30 helicopters we have to deliver. Chairperson, as far as the Airbus is concerned, the Airbus program is a unique program from a point of view of the way in which this program is being financed. You will recall that we initiated this program with Airbus military in France without having the required funds for this program on budget, on the capital acquisition budget. So the Department of Defense had to obtain funds as we went along in order to meet the payment conditions, the payment requirements for this program. Our agreement with the Airbus stipulates that we have to make certain payments on a predetermined time, and the DoD had to find the funding for that. The reason why this funding was not fully reflected in the baseline which we report against is the baseline as is indicated in the capital acquisition master plan, in other words, on the DoD plan program, and that is what we have to report against. We, in the case of the Airbus, had a commitment which was not fully reflected in the budget allocation on the capital budget, and therefore we seem to have spent more money on the Airbus program than what was budgeted for. However, the funds not indicated on the capital budget was obtained from other sources within the year. So this is merely a book entry and not not an issue of spending more money than the was budgeted for. We are spending according to a predetermined spending plan, and we are keeping to that plan. Chairperson, with regards to the project rebate service relating to the acquisition of the new generation infantry combat vehicle product system, this is a new infantry combat vehicle which is intended to replace the Rattle infantry combat vehicles which have now been in service in the DoD since 1976 and which are not maintainable any longer. The program, Chairperson, has been taking quite some time. One must bear in mind that this is one of the more complex programs that we are busy with at the moment. And the main problem for the delay, the main reason for the delay in the program is the fact that the Department of Defense has a requirement for development of this vehicle as well as for the acquisition of a number of these vehicles. They need to acquire 274 of these vehicles, or 247. Our first problem was the fact that we could not proceed with the approval by the DoD of the continuance of the program due to insufficient funding within the DoD for the program. And we have been spending the past 2 years negotiating the price with DNL in order to arrive at a position where this program becomes affordable and where we can achieve a contractual position with the contractor. I'll just give you some background on this, on the negotiations and on the process up until now so you can get an idea of how this program has been negotiated down to a point where we are now in a position where we can, in fact, contract. The first offer from DNL was received on the 24th of February 2005. We went out with a request for offer in 2004. And there was a single response from the DNL in partnership with DIAD from Europe, where the vehicle itself was a vehicle, or is a vehicle that will be acquired from Pacha and manufactured under license locally. The initial offer technically was very sound, a very comprehensive offer, and the offered vehicle with a local tariff met most of the technical requirements that were stated in the user requirement of the project. There were a few very minor deviations which can be overcome, primarily I think the one deviation from the critical criteria was the view of sight from the turret, where the requirement stated that we had to be able to see down to a certain elevation down from the turret itself, which could not be done due to the construction of the vehicle. This however can be rectified by means of a few technical modifications, not a big issue. The biggest problem was that the offer from DNL exceeded the budget for the Defense Force by about 3 at the time when we received the first offer. The Department of Defense, when we requested the offer, had on budget for this program approximately 5.5 billion rand. The first offer came in for the total system, including development as well as production. The tune of about 13.5 billion rand. So this quite far exceeded the available budget. We then went into negotiations with the DNL, and the price has progressively been brought down as part of this negotiation. On the 18th of November 2005, we received a second offer from the DNL, where the price was then reduced from 13.5 billion rand to 10.8 billion rand, which still exceeded the budget of the Department of Defense. During December 2005, we requested DNL to present its second final offer. This third offer came in at 6.68 billion rand for the total program, but during that offer we excluded a few items like ammunition, some of the optical systems and so forth. This offer was then used to present the project study report to the Department of Defense, and we received the authority to continue with detailed contract negotiations with DNL based on that offer. Negotiations with DNL with the aim of arriving at a contracting position commenced on the 8th of November 2006. in order to obviate the problem, because the offer which we received during 2006 so exceeded the available budget of the Department of Defense, which means that we could not continue with negotiations towards contracting for the entire system where we did not have sufficient funds available. It was then decided that we should negotiate with CNEL to contract only for development and industrialization of the system. The Department of Defense had sufficient funds on budget for that first phase of the system, and that we would then hold the contracting for the production of the product systems in abeyance until additional funds were secured by the department. At the subsequent Armament Acquisition Steering Board meeting, it was decided that we should have a contract for production of the vehicles, but that we should have a whole point of the development where a decision can be made as to whether we should commence with the production after the development and industrialization has been done. Which means that we could now contract for the system without having sufficient funds for the subsequent production. We started negotiating the prices with the mill, and we are now at a position where we have to resolve a few very minor issues on pricing, on issues like intellectual property, advance payments, and so forth, before we can contract. The aim was to actually find a contract for the system during March this year. This will probably now move out by 1 month into April. Technically, the system now meets all the requirements, and we have negotiated a very good product for the department with the NEL. A number of small outstanding issues need to be resolved, and we are now at a position where we have finalized the agreement regarding the cost of the system, and we've announced contracts for the system with a total cost, including production, of 247 vehicles. The amount of just in excess of 7 billion rand. The contract for phase one, which would comprise development and industrialization only, which would be a contract for 893 billion rand, provided with additional vets and provision for ammunition and other smaller systems. So we are within the budget of 1.3 billion rand. A total contract value for the industrialization and the development would be just in excess of 1.2 billion rand. This will be a program that will run over 4 years. We will then reach the whole point where we will definitely need to make a decision regarding whether we continue with production or not. Shepperton, then we had to report back on the 41-month delay on the ground-based air defense system. That is the ground-based air defense system for the SA Army. This contract was placed on CNEL during November 2002. Contract value at that point in time was just in excess of 800 million rand. Activation date was February 2003. And the contract was, or the system was contracted to be completed within a period of 36 months from February 2003. We, soon after placement of the contract, experienced an initial delay of 5 months in the activation date of the contract, which is primarily due to us having to make sure or verify that the guarantee provided by the NEL for the advance payment was in order. It took 5 months to verify that guarantee before we could activate the contract. This 5 month delay extended the contract period to 41 months, and the contract should have been completed on the 30th of June 2006. During May 2005, we received the first late delivery notification from CNEL indicating a delay of 9 months in completing the program. In August 2006, we received the second late delivery notification from CNEL indicating a further 45-month delay in the program. This would bring the total slip on the program to just 54 months, with an expected delivery date of 30 November 2009. At the moment, contractually, CNEL is facing penalties to the amount of 10% of the contract value, which would amount to 80 million rand on this program. Jefferson, the delay in this program is primarily attributed to, firstly, an extensive delay in contracting of subcontractors, mostly local subcontractors by Denel. I must bear in mind that OMSCOR, in its contact with Denel, provided Denel with a high-level system specification. This high-level system specification had to be broken down by them into a number of lower-level specifications which can be used to contract contractors or subcontractors for different subsystems of this program, and they had to devolve this high-level system specification into a number of lower-level specifications. That took some time. I think the biggest problem, Mr. Ralph mentioned Danelle is here, he's the program manager of this program. The biggest problem with this program is that Danelle totally underestimated the complexity and the extent of this program when contracted. The initial expectation was that this would be a program which would mainly comprise the integration of a number of subsystems, virtually a plug and play of a number of subsystems acquired from various subcontractors all over the world, both foreign and local. And what subsequently happened is, in order to properly integrate these subsystems from the various suppliers, requires an extensive redevelopment or development of interfaces for these, which was not anticipated when the contract was closed. To this point, as far as it goes, subcontracting of some of the work elements are still outstanding. A delay of more than 1 year was, as I mentioned just now, occurred primarily due to the translating of the high-level specification that we specified the entire system into a number of lower-level specifications. A number of design shortcomings were identified in certain subsystem elements, and these subsystem elements are now being redesigned at the narrow cost. These comprises, amongst others, the thermal imager, power supply for the radio interface modules, and a few others. One of the major work elements in this program is to ensure that all the logistics are there and to meet the requirements of the Department of Defense. So the logistics development is lagging at the moment due to the fact that some of the subsystem designs have not been finalized, and the logistics cannot commence, or the development of the logistics cannot commence until the subsystem design has been completed. And speaking on behalf of Denel, one of the biggest problems up until now is a very large personnel turnover on this program, which causes a loss of continuity. And I think there are probably only two of the people left in the program that started the program in 2004. Jefferson, this program is receiving very high level attention at the moment, and since the time that Mr. Ralph Wolf came on board at Denel, a number of risk mitigation processes have been instituted, and this program now is back on track to deliver a system to the DoD in September 2009. Over the past year, all foreseeable risks have now been identified, and detailed risk mitigation plans have been developed per risk. So they are now being managed on a risk by risk basis. Factory acceptance is now being performed on subsystem elements as they are completed and not on the entire system at the end. So we are trying to shorten this period by means of earlier involvement and earlier participation in acceptance of these subsystems, in order to identify the possible shortcomings and to rectify them before they are integrated into the larger system. Earlier user exposure to these subsystems have now been implemented. The initial basis on which this program was contracted was that the complete system would be delivered to the SNDF, where after the first user exposure would occur. That means that the qualification of the system would happen on a full system basis. What is now being instituted or implemented is that some of these subsystems have in fact been completed, although not fully integrated. For example, the missile subsystem is here. It was acquired from Shorten Island, has been installed with the DoD for the past 2 years already, and the user will now be given exposure to that subsystem, and they will actually start firing the missiles, although the missiles will not form, or the firing system will not form part of the larger planned system, but they can start getting exposure and training on these subsystems, which again will reduce the time before the system can be commissioned. And then user training on the subsystem level has already been implemented and has started already, and the first users have been trained on subsystems in instead of the original plan of doing training on one school system has been done. So those are the risk mitigation issues which have been implemented and which are being improved at the moment.
Thank you, Dr. Chair. Mr. Tomo, will there be another person presenting? Of course, I'm just afraid that we are running out of time for this presentation. There's another presentation on the floor. So can you just give us some speech in the presentation?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next issue or the next question that was raised by the committee related to AMSCOR showing a net loss of 7.3 due to a moratorium put on shelf sales by the SACC. And the committee will recall that very quickly, the shelf sales relate to equipment that become redundant that the DOD no longer uses. And AMSCOR take that and dispose of it. And largely this problem related to an issue of communication, because AMSCOR would submit to the NCC things that they were disposing for the NCC emission for that equipment. And some of these issues, the minister and the deputy minister and the DEFSEC did not have full insight into some of the things that were being disposed. And subsequently, we had established a forum between the Secretary for Defense and myself to discuss some of the things that need to be disposed so that the minister and the deputy minister and the DEFSEC don't see that for the first time. Then we have a meeting very regularly, and that is working very well. And below us, we've got Mr. Ramphulo, we've got the Chief of Acquisition, and the General Manager in AMSCOR who are doing the thing. So this issue is no longer a problem. And there was also an issue which concerned the 2.7 net loss of IMT. IMT, Algonquin and Project Mix under the funding of IMBL. And previously we made a number of presentations on the strategic nature of IMT, Algonquin and Geotech. And then, but during 2001, the DOD has provided AMSCOR with additional funding of 60 million rand to these three organizations, and their budget obviously was a little slightly bigger than that. And what we actually did was that we sat down and came up with tracking strategies for those organizations, and also subsequently implemented those tracking strategies. And the tracking strategies related to fitting the business of the organization to the available budget. These organizations largely depend on the DOD because they will take a specific fee to test certain specific needs of the DOD. So after the implementation of the tracking strategy, we have not experienced any additional problems as far as funding in those areas. Another issue that the committee wanted the AMSCOR to address relates to the need for a presentation with regard to the prevention measures being put in place to stop loss of personnel due to salary and limited growth areas. Mr. Magojo, if you can quickly take us through the presentation, please.
The first piece is quickly under measures to stop the loss of personnel due to salary. The problem arose mainly due to the fact that during the years 1992 to 2002, we paid below market average general annual increment. As a result, we were found by 2001 to pay on average of 36% out of the market. And then from 2003 to 2005, we managed to secure funds from the DOD to institute above market average general annual remuneration increment. In 2004, we actually, instead of keeping a blanket about market average annual increment. We look at the respective functional group, and there's a functional group for occupational categories, and in relation to how employees in those particular functional groups stand vis-à-vis the market. In 2006, we gave the annual general remuneration increment, but we also had a specific 2% which was intended to address specifically gap skills in the more vulnerable capability domain. And the criteria that we also factored in the performance of the people, that they are competent and market position comparability. And we have developed a specific remuneration model to address specific salary increase or salary issues on an ongoing basis as you know, things evolve and we analyze the situation. And and then moving on to measures to stop the loss of personnel due to limited growth career opportunities. It's a bit of a challenge here in that the organization, we introduce broadbanding. Broadbanding means that job levels are broader, and this allows for more flexibility in the utilization of people. Through this broadbanding, we've got only 6 job levels. However, the system does recognize that even though we do have broadband, but there is within broadband distinction on salaries, but this is not generally acceptable to all the employees. We then also look at other factors which may limit career growth to try and address this problem, such as the under-utilization of staff. We monitor that so that people are properly utilized at least. And the fact that we have a relatively low turnover rate, which is less than 6%, it also limits our ability to create space for people to move within the organization, particularly to move upward. And we have adjusted stress with the broadband, even though as I've indicated there is within broadband movement. People believe that movement, real movement, is when you move from one broadband to the next, and our broadband is within limits. And but we do try to mitigate this issue through remuneration, as mentioned earlier. And then this is a separate issue, the issue of transformation challenge as well as I think it was later.
Chair, there are 3 other questions that we haven't answered. But in the interest of time, let this person has indicated, maybe we should stop here. But the information is contained in our presentation that we have distributed. So I think we will wrap here.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. I'll ask the members now to interrogate this presentation of the different members of OMCOR, Mr. Materi, Mr. Magoyo, Mr. Fischer, and Mr. Solomon. For questions to them, please. Mr. Van Roelof, sorry. Let's take 5 hands and take another round. Mr. Lobo. Then Benji Ituri. And then Andrei. What's up? Start off with Mr. Primo.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I must be quite honest with you that I see this report as a very disturbing report. I say disturbing because my impression is after this report is that OMCOR is falling apart. you have a problem with your personnel. People are leaving the company. You don't have all the skills you need there. Your mainframe is outdated. You don't even get people who want to give correct maintenance on it and train people for that. And then in the end, you don't have money to do what you want to do. So that's really not a very good picture. I can ask really many, many questions here, Jefferson, but I'm going to ask a very few of them. One of my questions is, when is Armstrong going to stop with crisis management? Because at this moment, you're only doing crisis management. One of the more particular questions, Jefferson, if I look at the concerns and the issues raised by the employees, this reskilling of Armstrong employees, that you say that transformation challenges people from designated groups and so on and so on. My question is, what is the policy of affirmative action effect to obtain qualified people to do the job? What is the effect of that? What I mean by that, is it really a matter of you don't have the people in the market, or is it because of affirmative action that you only have to employ certain people from the designated group to do the job? That is my one question.
Second question
I want to ask, if you look at the replacement of the mainframe and the technology renewal, you say guidelines in place for managers to allocate the right device to the right person based on the requirements of the job. Now, this person, I can't see it. How can it be a situation to be improved? Because this is a quite normal management function to ensure and to allocate the right device to the right person. Why hasn't that been done from the beginning? That is my question. Chairperson, okay, maybe I will
stop
with those two.
Please stop
there.
You've got three questions.
Right.
So we ask that Honorable Kornowski, please.
My first question is on Project Kufaister, the infantry combatant. Now, it boggles the mind if you tell us that it has taken now 3 years to negotiate just on the price, whereas in the SA Army, the vehicles are between 25 and 35 years old. They're becoming obsolete. And we are negotiating with the NEL still on price after 3 years. I fail to understand it. I didn't get the first of what you picked up with the NEL on negotiating, but at a certain point in already 18 November 2005, you set the price with 10.7 billion or 270 million. In my calculation, that's 39 million an article for infantry combat vehicle. Is this a going out international? And then you came down to the final price now of 25 million, roughly speaking, of infantry combat vehicle. My question is this internationally a competitive price for the infantry combat vehicle? In my books, and I, maybe I shouldn't mention the price that I have in mind, my price is much more expensive than what you can get internationally. Or even maybe, let's ask the question, can't we, I don't know who the contractor is working for now, can't we manufacture cheaper than the contracted price of 25 million rand per vehicle? The second question I'm asking is on your underfunding gap of 10 million annually. Now you said for your capital renewal program, you need 60 million over a 5-year period, but you're running in an underfunding gap of 10 million per annum. And my question is, what are you going to do about this? Because what disturbs me, in your presentation, you say not only deteriorating infrastructure, but the poor response times by the users of your system. And by users, I believe, is your client. Well, so time is money. And I think then Armscore, if I understand this correctly, is not in a position to deliver effective service to its users. And my last question is your migration of the strategic facilities. When we had the strategic workshop, I could remember that you said that under the CSIR chairmanship, you are looking at the strategic facilities of our school to migrate it under this impartial list. Whether you agree with migrating the strategic facilities, the three you mentioned, whether you agree with it.
Thank you, Honorable Flower.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on the human resource. On your concern, you talk about challenges people designated areas, and then you mention the people they're looking for. Have you tried the university? Which faculties have you tried to find these people? Especially if you're talking about women and disability people. Where have you tried? Because since the people, there are so many people outside that you come to that next season. How do you check it? Then you talk about bursaries, making sure that you go through this program. You talk about bursaries to the training. Do you have any figure how many people are getting bursaries? And the financial support on the people who are already employed. There's how many of them and who are they? Because that's where the machine works. It's a problem of talking about finance and so on. But that's the problem which I wanted to find out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Benji.
Thanks, Jefferson. Mine is just one question. The changes on, I think, the performance of I know last week, the truth about Mr. Ramaphosa, and I'm sure it will also to the chief of DOD to pay attention to this one. He indicates, and it has been acknowledged this morning, that some of the matters that have been raised that AMSCOs have problems with these problems being delayed and then finding themselves, you know, not being able to execute some of their tasks. It's because of either the lack of financial support or cooperation from the Department of Defense. Now, what I want to find out is, I want to find out what is the actual, or the actual evaluator who does the assessment on the performance of AMSCO now, on this program. I'm raising it this way because if the program is there, and I've seen this with other aids, you'll find that if you own yours, yours is only to say, when I don't have money, I've got somewhere else to look at that I need a funding. But your daily thing that you're supposed to be doing on your agreed program, you do not utilize them. You utilize it to the maximum so that you really indeed look at the competence, look at the environment under which you are for you to survive and to make sure that you make every cent you utilize it efficiently and effectively. You will then come and again look at the actual person who can then fund you. But the one who's supposed to assist you with that funding, if he's not satisfied with your progress, might say no, but these guys, even if you find that they themselves are not playing the ball. You know. So I just want to find out who does this evaluation, the appreciation of AMSCO. Such that if it's DOD itself, then it must be able to come out to say, is it indeed DOD now, is it happy? Like the other day when Mr. Ramaphosa made that undertaking that if come Guinea, if you forward those programs to us, you meet the time frame, you do what we said you should do, we should be able to carry you. Thanks.
Yes, Honorable Andrej Botak.
Chairman, I would like to go back to the presentation we had 2 weeks ago, approximately 2 weeks ago at Stellenbosch. The issue of the skills gap was raised there also. And what we learned there is that, for instance, by example, the requirement, I think, is 29% female employment, particularly in the skilled personnel section, created a shortfall. And we were told that on account of policy, such posts are left unfolding and this created considerable tension on those people who are standing and trying to fill in with the shortage. Now, since arms corps mainly is dependent on the staff component to fulfill its mandate, and particularly in the skills department, has the arms corps considered relaxing the requirements? For instance, in the percentage of females that have to be employed, or percentage of days designated, referring also to the question of the Honourable Kumar was. Has Arms Corps considered that? Is it within in general policy? And it's not within general policy, has Arms Corps considered applying for relaxation in this matter in order to be able to meet its mandate more easily?
Thank you, members. Can the Mr. Tomo, can you respond to the first question for the fund people?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let's start with the question of the Honorable Funabal. He made the observation, or from what we have told the committee about people leaving arms corps, largely because they are going on pension. That we have got outdated IT, which is true. That we don't have enough money, which is also true. So if you look, those observations are correct, and if you look at what we did about 3 or 5 years ago, we picked up all these problems hitting us at once, and we as management decided what we need to do, and we went to the DOD and said to the DOD, please give us more money. They didn't give us money at the rate that we wanted for the money. And subsequently, we started getting involved in some other activities to supplement our income. We have done that successfully up to a point, but now the situation now, due to the transformation, is going to change completely. We can't do that going forward because of what we, Honorable Korenoff has commented about, that now some parts of AMSCO are going to the dairy. Now, the issue of when are we going to stop this crisis management? What is happening is because of the transformation, the part that AMSCO was able to use to generate some additional income is now going to form the dairy. And then what is happening is the dairy defense, evaluation, and research institute. So what is going to happen is that the DOD are calling for the reclassification of arms corps. We are currently a Schedule 2. We are most probably going to be classified to be a Schedule 3A. And in terms of the TSMA, the Schedule 3A should get from the department or from the government all the money that it needs provided to the government to approve the budget. So what is going to happen going forward is that we are going to submit the budget of our activities to the department and to Treasury, and they should fund whatever shortfall that exists. So hopefully that will address the issue of the credit management of the money. And then the effect of affirmative action on doing arms corps job, the effect is there, and we cannot deny it. And the reason is there, it's not there because, you see, I was listening to a debate this morning as I was coming here from the hotel, and they were talking about affirmative action. Affirmative action requires that we should employ black people and other previously disadvantaged groups in arms corps to reflect the demographics of the country. But we need to employ competent people. We don't have to employ people because they are seen a certain kind. We need, first of all, to employ people who can do the job. And then secondly, we need to address the affirmative action requirements of the country. So as we have shared with you 2 weeks ago and today, that is extremely difficult to find engineers, suitably qualified engineers, to come and work for arms corps, number one, because our salaries are a little bit low. We can't compete with companies, some of the people that we must compete with are people like Moraya Brothers, people like Anglo-American, because we are in the business of project management. That is what ASCO is doing. We are managing projects, and then these companies like Moraya Brothers and Group 5, they are also in the business of project management. And we must compete with those people, and our salaries are not up to par with the salaries that we are offering. But although we are doing project management, we are doing project management in a very specialized field, which is the defense environment. So it is very difficult for us to attract academic candidates, number one. Number two, there are very limited number of those candidates anyway. The pool is very small. So we are battling as far as that is concerned. So, but also, like I said, we must attract people who can do the job. There's no point of getting people here who come and sit and do nothing. Because in AMSO, the DOD wants its equipment. They want to go and fight the war. There's no way we can give them equipment which is not adequate. And then how do we improve our allocation of the IT? There was an issue about the allocation of IT devices. What Mr. Matibe actually meant there was that we said to ourselves, let's relook at the situation and make sure that people are allocated to the correct devices. People, by their nature, they like to have, some people by nature, especially the IT people, they like to have gadgets. You find that somebody has got a desktop PC, they've got a handheld PC, they've got a cell phone, and they've got a pocket PC. So you find that you can do the job with one equipment, but people have got three. He's got a desktop, he's got a laptop, he's got a handheld, and he's got a cell phone. All those things talk to each other. When he's here, he can tell you what his secretary is, what meeting his secretary should be sitting here. So we said, times are tough, let's try and cut back. Instead of having a desktop, we will give you a PC with a docking station. When you are sitting in your office, you will have a PC you can work. When you go away, you take that PC and go with it. And you don't need a handheld or a laptop and those things. So we're starting to rationalize and cut down so that we should save costs. Now, those were the issues that were raised by Honorable Koranoff. I hope I've answered all of them. I hope I've answered all of them. And to the issues that were raised by Honorable Koranoff, number one, the issue of Wolf Acer. Why has it taken 3 years to negotiate the contract with CNAM? As we have said, largely, the price was grossly unacceptable. The DOD had $5 billion to buy this vehicle. And this Dinel was coming with about $13 billion. That is highly unaffordable. I haven't actually worked out the prices of the vehicle. I don't know if Honorable Koranoff is correct with his estimation. That is Kevin Dandy.
Yes. The process actually took 2 years, since February 2005. When we received the first offer from Danel, just over 2 years now. As Mr. Thorne indicated, the original quote came in just in excess of 13 billion rand. One must bear in mind that Danel entered into a very complex work-sharing agreement with CIAD, and that the cost structure was a multi-layered cost structure, which then, and I'm sure Danel did not have much choice as far as the original pricing was concerned as a result of the Wiltshire agreement with the ad. Price came into the quite exorbitant. This, in negotiation with Danel, the cost structure has been simplified very, very much to a point where we are now at a price which we can contract. If one excludes the development cost, the non-recurring cost of this program, it does work out. 34 million rand per vehicle, which we have benchmarked against various comparable vehicles in the world. These vehicles would include, amongst other vehicles, like the Piranha and the Striker, which are being used by defense forces all over the world today.
this replacement vehicle is a bought out or bought in vehicle itself with a locally developed turret by Danel. These vehicles will be, the majority of them will eventually be manufactured locally under license in South Africa. As far as the cost is concerned, it's a comparable cost. Ours is actually cheaper. If you look at the unit costs, and that primarily is due to the fact that a lot of the non-recurring costs have been paid upfront. Development of the turret, development of the integrated vehicle has been paid upfront by other programs. So this gives us less of that development cost, which needs to be amortized over the full production quantity. So the production cost of 24 million rand is very, very reasonable compared to similar vehicles.
Okay,
sir.
And just to add, the committee must remember that one of the other things that we have been struggling with previously and what we never come here and told you was that why don't we support our own vehicles? So there is the issue of that we should support our own local industry first and foremost, like everybody else is doing it here or in all the countries. And then, as Mr. Christel has indicated, and this the price of this vehicle is comparable with the others. And we insist that the turret must come from here in the support of our own local industry. Right, and then there was the issue of the ICT, that we need 60 million, and then also we need 10 million on an ongoing basis. Mr. Matthew, you're saying to me,
in terms of the 60 million that we are asking for over a period of 5 years, that is the one we need to redevelop all the applications of good in a holistic environment. Right now we have a functional system, okay, in finance, order management, things like that. So we want to integrate and have one system that is able to service most of the requirements of the organization. Okay, so that is the 60 million that we are asking for now in the financial year, if the Board of Directors are approved. And then in terms of the current funding gap, okay, of 60 million and 50 million. When we saw that, okay, as IT were not receiving the necessary funds to be able to do that, then we said, okay, let's do an enterprise architecture project, right, investigate, okay, all the cost components across the board, okay, and then come up with a new strategy to say, what do we do going forward so as to reduce the current maintenance, application, support, and software costs. Okay, so that project then has highlighted that, say, all right, you have so many servers. So if you were to consolidate them onto, let's say, one server, let's say, take 10 applications, 15 applications, and consolidate them on a single server, then you will be able to save on the maintenance, save on the support, save on the licensing cost. So that's what we are currently doing at this point in time. So that we are within, okay, that amount that has been allocated to us. Thank you.
Okay, and then, Honorable Colonel also asked a very difficult question of relating to the migration of the facilities of family. And what he wanted to know is that do we agree with the migration of the facilities to the state? Well, personally, AMSCO is bringing the biggest chunk of these facilities to the pool of the dairy. So, personally, we would have felt that maybe the dairy should be consolidated under AMSCO. But obviously, the decision has been made that should not be the case. It should be a new organization, which is a standalone organization. We don't think there's anything wrong with that. Actually, that model has been done in the UK. They have taken the dairies out of a similar organization like AMSCO. They separated the acquisition from the dairy and have them as two separate organizations, and that is working well. So the model is okay. We've got no problem with it. We support it. And that would conclude the issue that were raised by Honorable Corona. Now, if we could go to the issue raised by Honorable Ndlovu, He wanted to know where we were sourcing our talent from and what are the bursary figures that AMSCO, the bursary figures from AMSCO. So I'll ask Mr. Mabuzo to quickly address those two issues and also note that the second question actually was intended to be part of this presentation, which we couldn't get to. Mr. Mabuzo.
Thank you. With regard to the bursary, firstly, where we post students to offer bursary to and subsequently to place on our training program, we source them primarily from universities and the faculties that we look for, essentially the engineering and the natural science, as Mr. Thomas indicated, that the students in part later part of the presentation. And then again, with regard to the bursaries, we offer on average 6 bursaries per annum. And as I indicated during my presentation, this is one of the, and bearing in mind that the bursary can fit into the training program, this is one area where we have liked to have been able to invest more. But we are constrained by other physical competing demands. Another question that you raised was with regard to the financial support for employees. Unfortunately, I can get the figure, but I hadn't prepared it. But bearing in mind that the request for study for employees is initiated by the employees themselves, it's not really triggered by the organization. So we support them when they come forward and say, once you have a study and if the budget allows you, and they support them. Although the employer may also suggest, you know, to manage and support them and sit together and say, in the light of your performance and even where you want to go, we recommend that you register for this particular course. But the manager cannot really dictate the situation.
Okay, and then last would then address the issues that were raised by Honorable Ndlovu, and then now to Honorable Mthuli. He wanted to know, he raised an issue about the performance of AMSCO in terms of who evaluates the performance of AMSCO, and also who approves the activities of AMSCO. You will remember that the activities of AMSCO, AMSCO draws its mandate from the AMSCO Act. And the AMSCO Act was written by the Department of Defense. So there is an act that gives AMSCO its mandate in terms of what it should be able to do or what it should do. And then, over and above now, the issue is also who manages their performance. The Auditor General manages what AMSCO is doing. The act says this is what you should do. The Auditor General looks over our shoulder every year to look at what we have been doing is what we are supposed to do. So there is no need for anyone else to be monitoring us on an ongoing basis, because the mandate is there. The Auditor General checks us if at all we shift to our mandate, and the board also looks at us as to shift to our mandate. And that should be sufficient. And then, as far as now, what we need to do with the DoD specifically, we sit down with the DoD every year and write a service level agreement, which they say to us, we want you to do this and this and this and this and this as the client. And then we agree, and then we sign, and then we deliver, and they measure our performance against that service level agreement that we have signed with them. And then finally, the last question relates to Honorable Borda. He raised the issue of a skills gap and wanted to know if AMSCO have considered relaxing its policy as far as that issue is concerned. That is the issue now of getting a number of women in our positions, especially the physical positions, the technical positions, and then getting affirmative action candidates and so on in those areas. Unfortunately, we can't relax our policies, because